This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. All along the Civic Media Radio Network, it's the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Good to be with you, Matt McNeil. Patrick here as well. Hello to everyone in Madison, Columbus, Waukesha, Milwaukee area. Good to have you with us this afternoon. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Coming up a little bit later on this hour, Rick Smith is going to join us. He does a national show, The Rick Smith Show, and he is in Boston for the Teachers Union. They got their big annual convention over there. We'll talk to him about that, talk to him a little bit about January 6th as well, get his thoughts on that as well. And then, of course, good to be with you this hour. Lots to talk about. You can get in touch with us numerous ways. Go to Matt McNeil Show on Twitter. Go to Progressive Citizen X, Matt McNeil Show on Facebook. You can email us at comment@am950radio.com up here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and as well, 952-946-6205. Patrick, how are you today?
Doing really well. How are you?
All right. It sounds like we're going to get in here in the Twin Cities. We're going to get some storms coming through a little bit later on.
Actually,
it feels like it. It's going to be like that.
Definitely. It'll actually be quite a bit later on. They're thinking the time 3 to 4 overnight tomorrow morning.
I'll sleep right through it. Who am I kidding? I'll be up the entire time. I'll be up. They'll wake me up. This morning I did my usual thing. Which is, and one of the things you'll discover me, I'll talk a lot about what I do in my life here. It's like I just got here to the radio station from a soccer tournament up on the north side of town in Minnesota, in Minneapolis here, up in Blaine area. And to get back from here, it's one of the things which is crazy is just the traffic in this town. And by the way, the traffic in Minneapolis, St. Paul, I'm not sure how things are in Madison or in Milwaukee area, but the traffic in Minneapolis in the last week and a half, 2 weeks or so, has gone from fairly non-existent to back to pre-pandemic levels. And it takes forever to get around this town. And I'm lucky to be back after sitting and roasting on a soccer field this afternoon. I will talk a lot about little things like this, just the things that come up here that I noticed. And one of the things I noticed today, I was at the grocery store. Now, with the pandemic, we kind of got into a thing where we would talk every week about what I was noticing, what was missing, what wasn't missing in stores and stuff like that. I haven't done that much lately. But something interesting happened today that got me – it kind of ties into the pandemic and it ties into a lot of things we have as a society. As a matter of fact, I would make an argument. I got a front row seat for what is probably the biggest problem with our society right now. And it's not – hey, political discourse is definitely not good. But I would actually say this is a much larger problem. So if I'm at your standard grocery store, you know, it's early in the morning. I love to go grocery shopping on Thursday mornings and Friday mornings early because the store is stocked. There's no one in there. You can kind of get in, get out. You're done. So I get there. I go do my grocery shopping. It's about 8 o'clock. I get to the registers to ring out. And, you know, at this point in the morning, it's 8 a.m. You still usually have one or two registers working. And then they've got, of course, like every place now, they've got your, you know, do-it-yourself scanning area where you can go and ring up your own groceries and be done with that. For some reason today, the ring up your own groceries, I guess, well, it was being serviced, I guess. That was the whole thing. They had shut down the check yourself out area. Yeah. I thought that was Instagram. No. The check yourself out of groceries area over at the grocery store. They had that shut down. So basically they had one register open. Now, I am 53. I remember being a kid going into a grocery store, there being five registers. It would be eight carts deep at every register, screaming kids, you know, parents just waiting in line. So I look at the modern grocery store and I'm like, wow, this is really still is pretty amazing. you know, we don't really have a problem with it. But I think that so many people are so used to self-checkout now as a convenience that when that option isn't there, did they turn this morning? Now, I am the jackass. I've got a cart full of groceries because I'm doing my weekly shopping. It's my wife and I got two kids at home, an occasional third kid who comes home and eats half the food I've got in the house, that sort of thing. So I've got a full cart of groceries. And as I get there, of course, I get in line and I notice right behind me right away, there's a person who gets in line right behind me. It's like she has like two things. I was like, you go ahead. No problem. Then I realized there's another guy that had like two things. I was like, you go ahead too. I ended up letting like eight people go by because I felt sorry. Like, you know, yeah, this is going to take me 10 minutes and 5 minutes, 5 minutes to ring out all these groceries. They're pretty quick. They just scan them. I got to pack them, but that's it. And all these people are so used to running into the grocery store, grabbing a box of donuts, scanning it, throwing their card in there, out the door they go. And that is – and this is a relatively new thing. I mean, what? How long, Patrick, has it been since the store started doing the self-checkout? I mean, was it 5 years is about it?
I think it's been a little longer than that by now. Not quite 10, but probably seven.
Seven or something?
Yeah.
So it's not been long. I mean, it wasn't that long. You went to a store. You had to wait in line at a cash register. But the way that I finally, after like the eighth person, I let the eighth person go by. I let them go by and I look back in the line. The bitter hatred that was on display was unbelievable. Just these angry, how dare you make me wait 5-6 minutes to check out? How you are wasting my time. One woman, holy God, I first of all thought she was going to kill me. I thought she was looking at my cart, she'd look at me, she'd look at my cart and look at me. I'm like, I'm sorry, I've got to get food for the family. Manager comes by, she starts yelling at me like, why is this? This is unacceptable. And you're like, oh, okay, yeah, Insta Karen, just add water. So I do not recommend that product, by the way. That has some really indigestion. How about I say it like that? Insta Karen. But she wasn't the only one. There was other people in line that were just clearly miffed, and they were miffed at me because I'm getting groceries. They want to go in there. And I said, is this really? I mean, in 7 years, we've gotten to the point where a mild wait in a line is just a bridge too far for some people. I get it. You weren't anticipating it taking you 3-4 minutes in a grocery store. By the way, they did open up another register, and of course, this one woman, this nearly sent her off the edge. I thought she was going to kill the manager when they did this. The manager opens up the other register. She goes to the woman who's right behind me because I'm getting scanned out at that point. And says, ma'am, I'll take you first. We're going to go with this. That one woman had like sprinted to her open register and she, fine. And you just, I could tell, I was like, you are going to murder her, aren't you? You're just going to murder her because you've been inconvenienced for 4 or 5 minutes. Wow. And it's not like you couldn't go into the office and say, hey, I'm sorry I'm 4 or 5 minutes late. I went to the store to go pick up some donuts for everyone. Hey, happy donuts. Everyone enjoy them. And the registers were down, so I had to wait to go through a regular register. Boy, aren't they a pain. Ha, 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 on with the workday. No, they could do that. But instead, it just was this angry, ha, rah, rah, rah. You were like, wow, really? And I started thinking about there's an element here that all of a sudden registered to me, and I said, okay, this is not just – what I'm seeing is an instant here. I'm seeing this right now with what's going on at this moment. But the reality is it became very clear to me. It's like this is actually a microcosm of what's wrong with our country today. Convenience has bred selfishness. It has. Convenience has bred selfishness. Go back to the pandemic. All the people are screaming like, how dare you shut down the Applebee's? You know, because that person is so, dear God, sign of the cross. But, you know, that person is so used to not having to cook. They just go over there and they get their platter of wings or salad wings or whatever it is. And watch the game, and that's their life. Now you're requiring them to go buy food and prepare it? What am I, you know, is this, am I Amish? What are you doing here? No, and that's kind of it. That's this, we wonder what happened to us as a country. Selfishness has become a virtue. And so it doesn't matter that you could kill someone with COVID. It doesn't matter that people could get sick and have long COVID. No, I want my deep fried Southern Southwestern egg rolls. That's what I want. Ugh. But that's what they want. I have a friend whose roommate ordered, I think it was Uber Eats, to drop off a soda. A soda. That was it. A soda. And he looked at her and says, there's a gas station half a block down. She goes, I know, I just don't want to leave. I just wanted to be here. And you're like, wait a second here. You just spent like $12 on a soda, which cost $2 or $3 over there. Just because you didn't want to go down two flights of stairs, go down half a block, get the thing, and come back. No, I think this is, this little microcosm of what happened just kind of exposed it. I said, we're so used to convenience that when we're mildly inconvenienced now, we either just shut down or we lose it. And that's a scary reality. That is a scary normalcy that we have got now. But that's where we're at. And I don't know how in the heck you fix it, because it doesn't take long for us having a convenience for us to now then demand that convenience all the time. And when that convenience goes away for 1 or 2 seconds, you lose your freaking mind. I mean, that is some scary stuff. Convenience has bred selfishness. I don't know how you fix it, but hey, at least I pointed it out for you. The Matt McNeil Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, Devil Radio 92.7 FM in Madison, WTTN 1580 AM, Columbus, WAUK 540 AM, and 101 FM, the Shaw and Waukesha, Milwaukee area. Good to have you with us. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. No, that's what it is. You know, I've got kids, and I mean, okay, we all have the glowing rectangles, right? We all have these phones. And it amazes me how many times I have to look at my children and say, do you know when it says it's an iPhone? That means it's a phone. And they've just, because they're so used to the convenience of texting or grunting out a few emojis at somebody, the concept of actual conversation terrifies these people. And God forbid you actually have to call and talk to them, because it's like, you want me to do what? You want me to do what? It's a phone. seriously, convenience has bred selfishness. That's the code word for today, code term for the day. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. In the wake of the news yesterday of the tragic raping of a 10-year-old girl in Ohio who had to go to Indiana to get an abortion because Ohio's laws basically made it to where, hey, 10-year-olds, they need to give birth. That's them. And Republicans who were terrified of the question of, do you force a 10-year-old child who's been raped to carry a child to birth, they basically started accusing this of being a made-up story. Well, yesterday, Gerson Fuentes, 27, of Columbus, Ohio, was arrested and charged with the rape of this 10-year-old girl. A lot of Republicans had dismissed it and called it a lie, including, and once again, including the Attorney General for Ohio, the top lawman in the state, basically said of a 10-year-old girl in his state who was raped and impregnated by a rapist that she didn't really exist. The story is a lie. They re-victimized this 10-year-old over and over again because they denied that she even existed without doing the basic research to figure out, oh, no, she actually does. And this is a horrible story. So there's been a wave of attempted responses by Republicans who have now tried their hardest to kind of acknowledge that, yes, the rape happened and the rape is bad, but still try to find some way to argue that it's worse that she got an abortion to prevent the rapist child from, you know, being carried by a 10-year-old girl. There was a guy yesterday, I think he was the Attorney General for Indiana, and I'm going to paraphrase this a little bit. I'm going to do an impression of how he was. He goes, well, the first thing we have to understand is he was an illegal. He was here illegally. He's an illegal. Oh, my gosh, he was an illegal. Prosecuted illegal. This is just the border crisis. Illegal. Okay, the girl was raped. But then we have to talk about who is this doctor that gave her the abortion. Abortion, doctor, prosecute. We're going to go after her. That's what we're going to do. Now, that's exactly how they conveyed it. And that's not the only person. I saw another person do this too. Okay, sure. Well, I don't know. I'm not even going to say there's three crimes here. I'm going to say, okay, fine. The guy was here illegally. Two, the woman gave her an abortion. Whether or not you are happy with that or not, it might be irrelevant. It sounds like it was a legal option in Indiana at the time. So there's that. But I think of the three separate incidences here we're talking about, by far the much larger and more important one is the fact that this girl was raped. And that is the new thing. Oh, okay, fine, right. Okay, fine. Whatever. Move on. I mean, that's the kind of mentality. That's freaking disturbing. That is really freaking disturbing. That once again, and here it is, we need to diminish this girl's suffering or even existence by basically trying, you know, okay, hey, I condemn the rape, but I am far more focused on the fact that the rapist was an undocumented worker. I mean, it's like, okay, the guy smuggled pandas. I don't care. That's not the bigger crime here, okay? Dear Lord. And this idea that now there is this other element that's really interesting that's trying to validate them criticizing her. Now, one side of that, there's two forks in the road here. One is what you're hearing some people say, which is, well, what she got wasn't an abortion. And you say, no, she got an abortion. She had to leave Ohio to go get it. You know, it was illegal to get the – if she stayed in Ohio, she would have been forced to carry that child. That's why she went to Indiana to get the abortion. And the thing that they'll say is, oh, well, but that wasn't an abortion. That was a different situation. So you can't criticize us for this because we've just labeled this 10-year-old's abortion just – it's not that. So you can't criticize us for it. That doesn't work. There is this other element who still is intent. I mean, once again, is intent to say the far bigger crime isn't the raping of a 10-year-old girl, but is the girl having the choice to not at 10 make the decision to carry that child to birth, that she can get an abortion for it. She can make that choice. So that is – one guy even made the point. He goes, you know, I think what we have to do here is make sure we understand that, you know, there's a positive light here that, I mean, she carries the rapist child to birth. I mean, there's – you know, definitely we understand the negative of all this, but, you know, it's – you know, we you can't really negate the crime what the man did by basically, you know, getting this girl an abortion. It's completely skipping past the victim here who was raped. Completely skipping past that part. That doesn't matter to them. It really is remarkable. And then the other thing is either they're quiet or they're like Jim Jordan, who once again as well is from Ohio. This was his state, who insisted this girl didn't even exist, that it was a lie. And when it was called out about it, tried to get snarky and go, hey, this is the media reported it. I was just saying what the media said. No, you yourself said it. You're a congressman. Grow up. You petulant man-child. But the reality is we can call him any names he wants. The reality is he doesn't care. This is why here's what we need to do with these guys. When you see Jim Jordan, you say, that's not Christian, Jim. Now, Jim Jordan, you see, I guarantee you this. You want to start shocking some of these Republicans? Start screaming that at them. Start screaming that at them. I guarantee you it will jar them. When they come back and say, well, it's not Christian to do what you want to do either, you say to yourself, "Is you're avoiding the point, Jim. You're not very Christian." And that at that point, they'll run for the hills. They will. Rick Smith, when we come back, it's the Matt McNeil Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's the Matt McNeil Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good to have you with us this afternoon, 952-946-6205. Here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, airing 8 to 10 o'clock right here on AM 950. Rick Smith is on the air with the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Rick, of course, an advocate for union issues, the workers' rights, as well as a great voice on the progressive side of politics. He is currently, I believe, in Boston, one of my favorite towns, for the American Federation of Teachers Conference, which is going to be going on this weekend. And he's kind enough to join us today to talk a little bit about that. Hey, Rick, how are you, my friend?
Matt, how are we today?
I'm doing very well. Good to have you. Are you in Boston right now?
I am in Beantown, and we are having a blast here at the AFT convention. Day one kicked off today. Randy gave an incredible speech, and looking forward to the next couple of days of speeches and activism. It's a huge, huge event.
Well, and essentially, let's start with the convention then, because what's the tone there? I mean, it's been 2 long years. Teachers are... they're amazing. They're absolutely amazing people. They're doing a lot of tough work. They've always been required to do a lot of tough work without the funds to do it. But then we went through this pandemic, and they were the target of many of these delusional nutbags out there. What's the tone you're feeling as you're there at the convention about what's going on?
Well, the first tone from everyone that I'm talking to is just grateful to be able to get back together and see each other and see people they haven't seen in a long time. And to have this event where people are able to get together again. That's the first thing. And then it's the amazing thing that teachers do. They're talking about how to make kids' lives better, how to do their jobs better, how to make communities better, how to fight for democracy, how to do all the things that we talk about all the time, and doing it in a way with such inspiration and passion that I gotta tell you, I'm ready to get out and take to the streets myself. But, you know, at the end of this, you know, when you sit down and you start talking about the issues and the arrows that you just talked about, the assaults on teachers, they are, you can tell, they're worn down, they're tired, they're frustrated, they're angry. But they're taking that frustration and anger, and I think, you know, in an event like this, and using it in a very positive, very constructive way of saying, look, we need to get out. We need to vote. We need to get out. We need to back candidates who are going to fight for public education, for common good, for democracy. We need to come together. We need to unite, not more division, not more hatred, not more separation, but more unity. And I think that's the message coming out of this. You know, the right wing is masterful at feeding the outrage candy. They're masterful at division. They're masterful at ripping us apart. But the folks here, it's all about unity. It's all about bringing people together.
Rick, the one of the things too, I got to tell you, the teachers union, teachers as a whole are just, I think, are brilliant. The teachers union here in Minnesota, they have basically been able to make sure the standards we have for education are being maintained. That the reality is that I think Republicans get in control. Their idea of what you're going to get is a mop and a bucket for most of these kids. They're not going to give them the education that they need. You know, talk a little bit about that, because that's one of the big fights that's out there right now, is making sure that the quality of education these kids receive is on par, is there to help them in the future.
Yeah, you know, again, when you talk about the political realm, you're really talking about future for our kids. You're really talking about opportunity for our children. And as I was, you know, I was talking to somebody today, you know, I look at, I brought my daughter with me to this. My 13-year-old came with me to this event because I want her to see this in action. I want her to see this moment in history. I want her to see people who are fighting the good fight. And I said, you know, you're living history. You're going to, when your children are your age, your grandchildren are your age, this moment is going to be so important. And you're going to have to answer, what did your parents do? What did this generation do? What did you witness in this moment in history? I want you to see that there were good people who were fighting the good fight. And win, lose, or draw, whatever the future holds for us, I want her to know, and I want her to be able to say, look, there were people who tried, there were people who fought, and hopefully, ultimately, I hope out of this, good wins. But I wanted them to see that, and I think some of that is what's being played out here.
Rick, as well, one of the things, too, that I think is important is that there has been this war on the teachers. As a matter of fact, I honestly think if not for the teachers' union, Republicans would have raided every education budget in every state in this country and given all that money to wealthy people. That's one of the reasons why the teachers are target number one for Republicans, is because they are the only thing, the teachers' unions are the only thing stopping the Republicans from basically pulling every tax dollar out of public education and giving it to a tax break to a billionaire. That being said, we do have a lot. I mean, education is changing. Charter schools, public schools, private schools. How has been the efforts here by the American Federation of Teachers to get organized in some of these areas where, you know, once again, it's coming back strong, getting more members, getting more schools involved in the AFT here and finding out how that's going? How has been their organization going?
Well, from what I've been told and in talking with people here, they are trying and they're succeeding at organizing charter schools. Because look, you know, like in my state of Pennsylvania, one of the worst states in the country for charter schools, there's so much money going into this and the abuses that those teachers have to endure. You know, it's front and center. So, you know, the teachers here have an interesting line because, you know, they want to fight for public education. They want to fight for full funding of public education. But like in a state like mine, where charter schools get so much money and so much influence, you've got to organize those teachers to have the same kind of power that the public school teachers have. So they're walking an interesting and fine line. Mm-hmm. But it's one that they are winning. And, you know, I was just talking with someone earlier today who was a teacher at a charter school. And the story that she told of how, you know, how horrible the treatment was before the union came in and how horrible that they, you know, they were paid and, you know, just all of the deplorable conditions and the expectations and everything. When the union came in, she said, life got better.
Yeah.
And for me, that's always been the message, whether you're a truck driver or a teacher or whatever. Union job equals better life. And the second the union came in, life got better. And for me, that's the message out of this. Outside of that, for the kids, she said, look, life got better for them as well because the education opportunities got better. We started demanding that the money be spent in a better way. And this is where I think there has to be a moment where parents get involved in this as well. It's not just the teachers fighting this fight. It's got to be parents. It's got to be citizens. It's got to be all of us in this. It's not just the teachers. Mm-hmm. We got to stop making education the place where we dump all of our problems. We got to stop making public school the place where we dump all of our problems and let them deal with it. We've all got to be involved with this, Matt. At least that's my thought.
Well, and your thought is spot on as always there, Rick, because what you're looking at is, you know, you don't go to parent teacher night. You don't go to the conferences. You don't go there. You don't ask questions in this, but then all of a sudden you expect the teacher to do everything you demand at a moment's notice. There are times for people to go in there that they can give feedback and talk about what they want. And the reality is you're right there. If you don't have active, engaged parents, it doesn't matter the amount of good the teachers can do. You have to have a working unit there with both sides working together, because that's how you get kids very well educated. And I've seen that with my three kids myself. That's how it works. Parents, teachers, yep, all involved, administrators as well. And you can get a good product there. By the way, I do love your comment there about charter schools. Okay, I'll put the disclaimer out for us, Rick. Sure, there's a few charter schools that do a great job. Fine. But here, even here in Minnesota, all the charter schools, which the Republicans were pushing, they finish like 10 points or less on annual testing in Minnesota every single year. They are far worse option than public schools. And yeah, that where you've gotten some elements of the unions getting in there and organizing, that has all of a sudden, guess what? They're getting better grades. They got a better quality of education that's going on there because the teacher union bring that in with it.
Right. And at the end of it, this is the important part. When you empower teachers to do what they're trained to do,
yep,
you get better outcomes.
Yep.
When you empower people to do what they love to do and what they're passionate about doing and what they're good at doing, they're going to do it well. If you're beating them down, if they're worried about how they're going to feed their children, if they're worried about how they're going to get to and from work, if they're going to worry about everything else, you're going to have problems. It doesn't get any simpler than this. Treat people with dignity and respect. Empower them to have a voice in the workplace. You're going to get much better outcomes.
Heaven forbid. Rick Smith joining us, The Rick Smith Show. Once again, TheRickSmithShow.com. That's where you can find it. Rick, let's turn our attention. I want to ask your opinions on the January 6th hearings, especially what happened earlier this week. My gosh, they laid out the entire thing. And yeah, Trump is guilty of trying to overthrow the government of the United States of America.
Yeah, surprise.
Yeah.
Shock. Oh, my gosh. Tell me, is it not true? Well, here's the thing. You and I, we've been following this from day one. It's something we've known. Most of this stuff that we either knew or we believed or was already being reported, but to have it confirmed in the words of the very best people surrounding him, again, there are no liberal voices, there are no Democratic voices in those witness chairs. Those are all the very best people. Those are all Republican operatives. Those are all Trumpkins there. To have Cassidy Hutchinson come and say the things that she said, to have Cipollone come and say, I don't disagree. Pretty damning. Mm-hmm. Now, the big bombshell for me was, is there going to be a witness tampering charge coming? Because that's a direct allegation by Liz Cheney that the former president did, in fact, make that call, did attempt to tamper with a witness, and again, this is not unusual for this guy, from what I understand. It's the MO of the Don.
Mm-hmm.
So, going to be interesting to see where it goes. I'm looking forward to the grand finale. I believe next Thursday is going to be the finale, possibly.
Well, there's a rumor. There's
prime
a
time must see TV.
There's a rumor out there.
I'm looking forward to it.
They might try to get an interview Trump and Pence themselves now. They're actually starting to weigh the option of, do we have them come in and ask questions of them? And
oh,
so that would be very interesting to watch. I think that would be great.
I'd pay to see it. Cuz I would pay to see them ask Mike Pence one question. You know, how do you feel about your guy trying to have you hung?
Well, ask him that question after you play him the audio of it. Oh, by the way, let's refresh our memories what that day was like as you ran for your lives, Mr. Vice President. Yeah, the thing for me that was, and you're right, by the way, the witness tampering, that's got a lot of legal teeth. That's trouble for Trump. But as well, it was on January 4th, him saying, oh, I'm going to send the mob up there to attack the Capitol. And basically saying that would, you know, it becomes premeditated at that point, that the whole argument they had is it was something organic that happened that day. No, Trump himself is saying, nope, I've got the Congress people in the Congress. They're going to do their work. I'm going to try to pressure Mike Pence into flipping this, and then I'll send the angry mob to attack, and they'll have no choice but to put me as president. And I think that was the part for me that was like, okay, yeah, you're done.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I believed that was the reality from day one.
Oh, yeah.
You know, none of this stuff seemed spontaneous. You know, and I've said from the beginning, and I've taken some flack from my audience, that, you know, most of the people there were just dupes and cover. You know, most of the people who showed up on the buses, they were just, you know, figures to be standing around while the real operatives, the militia types, the Proud Boys, the 3%, those cowards, they went into formation. They went into attack mode. They were well-formed. They were well-trained. They went and they knew exactly what they were doing. And they went only as far as they were going to go. I truly believe they could have gone further had they really wanted to. I think they didn't want to grab a congressman. I don't think they wanted the mob to grab Pence or them, because that would have been a different scenario. I think they wanted to do what they did so that they could have their plan, that they had all of these memos laid out so that they could move that forward.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree wholeheartedly, and I think that it is kind of one of those things where, yeah, as you saw, the witnesses that came down, yeah, when we realized we were being duped. And reminder, too, they both said this: we came to Washington, D.C. because Donald Trump told us to come there. We ended our siege because Donald Trump asked us to do it. They were just following his orders at that point.
Yeah, now I don't feel sorry for any of them. No, nope. I thought I was a good guy. Nope. You got duped into it. You pay the consequences now. And the reality is, there are no good people in this moment. There are no heroes. Mike Pence isn't a hero. Cassidy Hutchinson is not a hero. None of these people are heroes, because in the moment that it mattered, they didn't stand up and they didn't speak out. Mm-hmm. This is all well after the fact, after so much damage is done, after so many hearts and minds have been broken, after so many lives have been torn apart. I'm sorry, you don't get a mulligan on this.
No.
The fact that you came and you did the right thing, okay, you don't go to jail. That's your prize. And that's kind of where my mind has been in this, especially with Mike Pence. What the blank was he thinking? He was a congressman during the years when Bush was in office.
Hey, Rick, I gotta stop us there because we're out of time. The Rick Smith Show, once again, it's right here on AM 950, 8 to 10 o'clock tonight. And Rick Smith, of course, you can go to thericksmithshow.com. Rick, thank you very much. We'll take a break. Come back. Matt McNeil Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Matt McNeil Show in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Madison, Columbus, Waukesha, Milwaukee. Good to have you with us all today. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I'll spotlight Rick Smith. But what that means is I'm going to pull that interview out. I'll have it actually on SoundCloud and on iTunes and stuff. You'll be able to just hear that interview with Rick. He's fantastic. And if you have not listened to The Rick Smith Show, a very quality show, especially if you're a union guy. Oh, my gosh. His labor issues takes are top-notch. They're the best in the business. TheRickSmithShow.com. That's TheRickSmithShow.com. Earlier today, we were talking about the Cassidy Hutchinson testimony with Rick there. And earlier today, there was a story out in regards to Trump. And this is, I believe, off HuffPo. Former President Trump tried to call White House support staff after had been speaking with the House Select Committee investigating January 6th attack on the Capitol and would have corroborated the damning testimony given by former White House aide Cassidy Hutchinson last month. So I went back and I thought about the Cassidy Hutchinson testimony. And I said, okay, wait a minute here. So this is a support staffer. Now, I'm not exactly sure what that means. I think I know what that means. That would not be like Secret Service. If that was a Secret Service agent, they would have listed Secret Service agent, I believe. So I think this is actually part of the staff that works in the White House, the non-political staff, you know, the people that, you know, clean the place, people that, you know, cook food, people like that. That would be my guess. Because there are two things that jump to my attention as what he would be – why would he be talking to a support staffer about? Now, one was the story where he tried to violently take control of the car and drive him over to – so he could walk with my people as we climb the stairs of the Capitol to be anointed the king. I mean – president again. There's that. Now, so a support staffer, someone just in the room delivering coffee or tea or picking up trash or something, cleaning a room, something like that. I would have they been in the room with them at the time? when she was apparently told about that story. I don't know. That's one. I think it's the other story, though, where Cassie Hutchinson made the point where she heard a large crash and she turned her head around the wall and saw ketchup dripping down the wall. Our toddler of a president threw a temper tantrum and he threw his food. Well, that's at least the implication. Either that or, I can't stand you, Hines. I can't. I'm throwing you now. That'd be my guess. So think about this. Because actually, I think it's the ketchup story. That, because someone had to go clean that up, clearly. You know, you can't throw ketchup on the Taft dining room and basically say, yeah, we'll just leave that there. We'll call it a Bansky. No, you can't do that. So, Trump, even though, of all the testimony that she put forward, it was basically saying that he was behind this and he was pushing this crowd to try to overthrow democracy itself. None of that bothers him. None of that bothers him. The story of him throwing food against the wall, that sounds like Trump, doesn't it? That sounds like him. You found out I was throwing a temper tantrum and I threw a hamburger? Oh, the American Hamburger Association will never forgive me. So I'm going to guess that's the story. And I'm going to guess that, hello, waiter 14, I mean, John, hi, this is Donnie T. Yeah, I know, I insulted you on a daily basis before, and I know that I never even cared about you at all until after that latest testimony. But hey, buddy, how's it going? Good to hear. Hi, wife and kid. Okay, never mind. Let me get down to the point here. You know, there's a story floating around here that I threw food against the wall. Now, I know you were the person that would have gone in there and cleaned it up if that had happened. You don't remember that happening, do you there, Phil? Todd, Mark, I forgot what your name is again. John, you and I are buddy, simpatico, like brothers. You wouldn't tell anybody about Donnie T's hamburger temper tantrum, would you? Oh, please don't do that. Oh, we'll be best friends forever. I'll let you kiss Ivanka. Oh, or Eric. Oh, I'll let you decide. Anyway, you forget all about ketchup stains on the wall. You forget all about that. And you just let Donnie T take care of you, and you and I will be best friends. I got to go. Bye. Tell me that's not the audio from that phone call. Because that's him. Donald Trump is by far, far more concerned about being exposed as the white trash that he is versus actually being, oh, yeah, you tried to overthrow American democracy itself. He's not a smart guy, folks, if we haven't figured this out. He is not exactly the smartest guy. And everything for him is about image. Everything for him is about image. And so he doesn't want to look like a spoiled, petulant man-child. And so, and I still think, I mean, I think he looks at those ludicrous paintings that people paint of him where he's ripped and muscular like it's a 1980s action hero with a gun in one hand and an eagle and holding a Bible in the other, and he's fighting bad guys. I think he thinks that's true, because there's a lot of people on the right that like to think that this extremism, big lie, Trump was great, you know, story is populism. It's not. It is by far, and getting less and less every day, a fringe like. And QAnon is even is an even more narrow fringe like. But that's what these people are like. They want to believe that. And there's nothing, he doesn't even have to try to convince people of that. But all of a sudden they find out, oh my gosh, he threw a temper tantrum and he threw a burger against the wall. So my guess is going to be is that after the January 6th committee heard about this from Cassidy Hutchinson, contacted the support staff of the White House and said, who was working the dining room that day? Did you have to clean ketchup up off the wall? And Donnie T was like, oh my God, they're onto me. Don't let them know what I did with the gravy boat. Oh, okay. Give me that phone. Call the what's-his-name guy that used to give me food and clean up after me. I'm sure he's not upset with me. Oh, the witness tampering, dude. That's got some teeth. That's got some teeth. I think he's in trouble with that. Madison, Milwaukee, Waukesha. Enjoy Devil's Radio. That's coming up next. Minneapolis, St. Paul, hour two of this show. That's up next right now. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Hour two. Hello, Minneapolis, St. Paul. Had to drive back from freaking Blaine again today. Right before this show. So, Patrick, I was talking about this with Brett yesterday. It had to it took nine cycles through the traffic lights for me finally to take that left turn onto southbound Central 65 in Blaine.
Oh, yeah, off of 109th or whatever.
105th, I believe. Okay. It was 105th. Oh, my God. It took me 45 minutes. It took me 20 minutes just to get a mile and a half down to Highway 10.
Oh, boy. I did have my own nightmare yesterday. I went to the Twins game, and so I parked on the top deck. And
A, B, or C?
It was ramp A. I usually park in B, but B. It was already full.
Oh, it was? Top deck of B is the way to go. Top deck of B is the way to go.
Okay, so I was on the top deck of A, and I got up there, and I watched the cars line up in a snake, and I watched the cars in front of me. And I keep in mind, I did not turn my car on. I was just sitting here watching things go on around me. I did not see anyone move for about 75 minutes.
That's about right. That's, you know, it just, it's, it, you, it's either you leave a little early or you just basically, I like parking on the top deck because it gives you a nice view of the downtown. So, you know, just kind of go out there and just plan to visit for a while and wait for cars to start to dissipate, and that's the way to go. But, yeah, that's a little tough. Now, Blaine is – that is 65 Central. I'm going to do whatever I can to try to get that 65 Central on the docket at MnDOT to where they've got to, they got to highway that out. They got a highway. And I understand, yeah, that, you know, people aren't going to be able to turn into the Chili's and get, you know, their food as quickly as they were before. But it's got – you got to get a better system. I did take the back route to the multiple people who said, Matt, go the other way on 105th. When you get down there, you take this S turn, you go by the Blaine Airport, and you eventually dump out at 95th at 35W. I took that today. It's still, first of all, when your faster option to get to Hopkins is to do 35W at 95th, holy vey. Anyway, I got back down. It was probably 10 minutes faster, though, than having to wait to make that turn onto 65 Central. It was it's design. It's bad design, man. It's bad design, but, you know, it is what it is. You know, and there are other places like that. I mean, I went to the last Rush concert. No, that wasn't R40 was the last one. So the one before that, Time Machine, that was at the X. And there's that parking ramp right across the street from the X there. I was on the top deck there. That's all I did is I got out there and leaned against the front of the car and sat and watched downtown St. Paul and until, because I knew it was going to be, even though that concert got over at like 10:30, I didn't get home till like midnight 5 because of that. I just said, I'm going to be here, but it's a pretty city. St. Paul, you're a beautiful downtown. I love you. I don't mind doing that, but Blaine, with its abandoned gas stations and overgrown parking lots, it's not nearly the visual stunningness that you would think. You know, it's the pageantry, the magic. It's not there as much. God, it was a hot day today. A lot of kids sweating up there. 952-946-6205. So I've got a new horrible accident that's happened. Well, not to me, to a zookeeper out in central Minnesota. He's been hospitalized Wednesday after being bit in the head by a camel. Ah! and then dragged 15 feet before another employee who was also bit could intervene. Okay, wait a second here. So the camel's got one guy in his mouth, and you come up to him, and I get it. You're trying to save him. How do you allow your head to get anywhere near his mouth? The incident unfolded at 2:45 at Hempker Park and Zoo near the town of Freeport. According to the Stearns County Sheriff, a 32-year-old Roger Blenker was escorting the camel through an alleyway when the camel placed Blenker's head into his mouth. That's called biting, I think is the technical term for that. He bit down and dragged him around for 15 feet. Oh, that's not the way I want to go. Another zoo employee, 32-year-old Seth Wixon, came to Blenker's rescue, placed a plastic board in the camel's mouth to release its bite. I had a cousin that was like that, too. You know, just, hey, sorry. Sorry. It was a stick for the cousin. But, I mean, still, needless to say, like, open. All right, good boy. The camel then charged at Wixon and also bit his head. He bit him in the head, too. At that point, the head-biting camel, you know his M.O. Why are you allowing your head anywhere near that camel's mouth? I'm not saying you pull, you know, an Arnold Schwarzenegger and Conan the Barbarian where you punch the camel, but bob and weave, dude, bob and weave, it's a camel. Both men were eventually able to run to safety with some new piercings. No, Matt, why are you doing that? Come on, man. This is a serious story of the camel biting the guys in the head, two of them. I thought Snickers satisfied. No, apparently it's zookeeper head. Blenker was transported by helicopter to the St. Cloud Hospital. Wixon declined medical treatment. Wednesday evening, Hempker Park Zoo issued a brief statement about the incident with the zoo occurred, saying normal zoological operations. Our owner did sustain minor injuries, expected to make a full recovery. The camel was not injured during the interaction. Remains in good health. Thanks for all your continued support. Well, that's one way to get a look at the teeth. His dental work is looking great in here. Camels. Yes. Occasionally you'll find some place that's got camel rides. Not the experience you think it's going to be. It's a camel. It's, you know, if you want to ride on a dry, obnoxious, hairy beast, hey, jump on back of my back, man. Come on, off we go. Whee! $20. Oh, like I wouldn't do that. Oh, in a heart. I could make some money. I need to make an app. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I promise I won't bite your head. Sorry. No, we are not doing Matt McNeil camel rides at AM 950. Not anytime soon. State Fair, maybe. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I'm glad the guys are recovering. I'm glad the camel didn't get euthanized. I'm glad about that. There's another story that's happened of a question here on police abusing their authority. And by the way, I should mention coming up here, Ross Dautheim is going to join us from MGSB Justice. He's going to join us with an interview with Brett coming up here at 4:35. I want to make sure I mention that. But I want to mention this story, and this actually came from KSTP. A confrontation with Ramsey County Sheriff's deputies more than 2 years ago still brings Michael Torrey White to tears. Emotionally, it still bothers me to this day when I think about it. A deputy tackled, handcuffed, and detained Torrey White outside his Falcon Heights apartment in February of 2020. Authorities were responding to a call about a disturbance involving a suspect described as a black male in his late 30s. Torrey White is a black male in his late 60s who relies on a walker. So clearly not the same guy outside of black. Think about this. Okay, once again, Ramsey County Sheriff's gets a call about a disturbance. They're saying it's a black male in his late 30s. They see a black male with a walker in his 60s and says, there's our suspect. They never said, sorry, we got the wrong guy, Torrey White said. They never apologized to me. He was not arrested that night. 10 days after Torrey White filed an excessive force complaint with the Ramsey County Sheriff's Office, he was charged with obstructing the legal process and disorderly conduct. He was charged. Wrong guy. Clearly the wrong guy was handcuffed, tackled, and detained by Ramsey County Sheriffs. And after he filed an excessive force complaint, which he had a right to do, sounds like the clown car brigade over there decides to go out with some retribution charges and charge him with obstructing the legal process and disorderly conduct. It's like payback, Torrey White said. You complain about us, we're going to charge you. How do you like that? Prosecutors in the Ramsey County Sheriff's Office have not responded to multiple requests for comment. Oh, gee willikers, I wonder why. Reminder, I want to remind everyone of the Stallings video. The police, the prosecutor, they all knew Stallings had done nothing wrong. And yet they still try to get him to go to jail for a portion of his life, even though they had all the evidence that Stallings hadn't done a damn thing wrong. They still try to throw him in jail and only acted as if there needed to be some review when the jury very quickly came back and said Stallings hadn't done a damn thing. Now, that was Minneapolis police, but I see a trend. And by the way, prosecutors in the Ramsey County Sheriff's Office, your days of being quiet about this are over. You need to start opening your freaking pie holes and explaining what the hell's going on here. The misdemeanor obstruction charge is under increasing scrutiny by defense attorneys and state investigators who say it's abused by police and disproportionately used against minorities. In Ramsey County, people of color account for only about a third of the population, yet they made up nearly 60% of those arrested for obstruction by sheriff's deputies over the last 5 years, according to Channel 5 Investigates, review of the data that identified arrestees by race. It's a similar story in Hennepin County, according to Alicia Granz, a assistant public defender. It's a charge that's pretty amorphous and kind of easy to throw on, just easy to say, he tensed, he moved away from me, Gantz said. In 2020, Grants asked Minneapolis police for 5 years of data on every person officers arrested for obstruction. Two-thirds of the arrestees were black. We all know that people of color are not the minority, are not the majority, Grant said. They're not two-thirds of the Minneapolis population, so that's telling me something that's going on right now. And I think it's in both cases, it's telling you something. The Minnesota Department of Human Rights made similar findings in its recent investigation of the Minneapolis Police Department. A report cited a high-level leader with Minneapolis police who said officers often use the obstruction charge for things that could fall under the category, arguably, of, you know, pissing off the police. You just made us mad. We're going to file a charge against you. Grants does not represent Michael Torrey White, but says the details of his obstruction case are familiar. My thoughts are likely the man didn't obstruct the legal process, but him filing the excessive force complaint was something that made the police officer mad. Grants said, and I paraphrase that, there are plenty of body-worn camera videos, squad videos, where I've seen exactly that happening. Grants has not seen the body camera video involving Torrey White. Neither has he, by the way, even though he's being charged. The Ramsey County Sheriff's Office says it won't provide footage of the incident until after a court hearing scheduled for next month. You're not providing it to the victim, the defendant? That's interesting. In his report, Deputy Kyle Williams said that Torrey White refused to respond to commands. Now, once again, I want to remind you, this is a 60-year-old black man who needs a walker. A 60-year-old black man who needs a walker. And apparently Deputy Kyle Williams said, you're not jumping fast enough for my liking. He yanked his arm away from me and began yelling not to touch him, that he doesn't have to talk to me. Considering he wasn't the guy you got. Okay, well, let's let you know, deputy, if I may. 30-year-old black man, 60-year-old black man with a walker. He might have been, I know this might be hard for you, deputy, to follow. See if you can just catch along here. He might have been upset because he hadn't done a damn thing wrong. And here you guys are still attacking him. And that might be it. I mean, maybe that might be the problem, is that he was completely innocent of everything. And you guys were just roughing him up. Tory White remembers it differently, though. That's the report. As I looked at the police report, he sounded like he was trying to have a conversation with me. That did not happen, Tory White said. Later that night, or earlier that night, Tory White recorded a dispute between the actual suspect and a driver in a gray sedan in the parking lot of the apartment complex. When he went to check in his daughter's car for possible damage, Tory White says he did not immediately know it was a deputy who grabbed his arm from behind. I pulled back. Next thing I know, I was up against a wall, and Tory White, who added that he removed his hearing aids before going outside, I didn't hear a word. Okay, so let me update this for you. They thought a 30-year-old black man was actually a 60-year-old black man with a walker who needs hearing aids. All right. The sheriff's officer later cleared Deputy Williams of any wrongdoing. Oh, of course not. But, hey, can we see the video now of it? Oh, we got to keep it secret. Oh, we can't let you see it in secret. Anytime a police officer doesn't want to show you the body cam footage, almost every single time, they are in the freaking wrong. They know it, and they don't want anyone to see it. That would be my guess here, is they know they can't explain any of this because the body cam footage shows a different story. That's my suspicion. And the point of this is not for you guys to try to frantically bulk erase your videos when you do stuff wrong. It's supposed to be about accountability. And let's face it, it's just crap police work if you're looking for a 30-year-old black guy and you look at the 60-year-old in a walker who's deaf and say, there's our suspect. Dear Lord, you might as well look at me and say I'm a suspect, although you wouldn't do that because I'm white. Let's just be honest. 2 years later, Tory White is still facing misdemeanor charges. He said he recently turned down an offer from prosecutors to plead guilty to disorderly conduct instead of obstructing. I just don't want to go away from their sake. I wanted to go away for my sake, Tory White said. I'll make a complaint. You bring the charges against me. That's not fair. It's not. And they're still, my guess is they know he has done nothing wrong, and yet they're still trying to get him to plead a case. Because I'll tell you what, when that video does get released, if it does show that he did absolutely nothing wrong and they went ahead with this, I would sue the crap out of that county. The crap out of them. And the individual officers. This is just, the reason you have the body cam footage is because of accountability. If your officers screw up, then you have to have the guts to say, guys, you can't do that. I'm sorry. We're going to reprimand you. Don't worry. We'll go in your file, apologize, do this, and you move on. The reality is, the only reason I'm talking about this now is because they went and filed these charges after the fact. And here they are, because this guy is not willing to take their crap plea deal. Here they are. It's just a shame. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Like I said, these are my suspicions about what's going on, but prove me wrong, Ramsey County Sheriff. Prove me wrong. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Oh, there's a brilliant... Oh, I got to give Broadcorp credit here. There is a brilliant take on a post from Frankenstein himself, Matt Burke. Burke, who is becoming a walking gaffe, can't get out of his own way. He's got a new video out where he talks about, for the record, universal basic income is a bad idea. There is no such thing as free money. Now, really quick here, make sure we understand the reason why we have, such things as minimum wage and people are floating the idea of universal basic income is because people have conspired to prevent people from getting paid the wages they deserve for years. And I never see a conservative criticize a business or a business owner who has purposely and intentionally shortchange their employees and not pay them what they're worth. Instead, it's always a, why are you crying? You just quit and go get another job. There are no other jobs available. Well, then just shut up and take what you get. Ha, 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 ha. I love being rich. That's kind of the wealthy, that Republican wealthy mentality. And by the way, the only people that are saying that are people who are really wealthy. But Matt Burke, he's got a bit of a, he's got a nice house there. But no, it's the reason why is because the workers of this country are getting screwed in this whole system. I mean, I said this about inflation. Is it inflation when every major corporation has got record corporate profits? Because that doesn't sound like inflation. That sounds like greed. It sounds like greed. And even the companies that are, oh, they didn't meet expectations, they're still making 25, 30 cents on the dollar. I mean, it's they're still doing pretty good. Anyway, back to this thing with Matt Burke. So Matt Burke, fire bad. He says, once again, universal basic income is a bad idea. There is no such thing as free money. He has said that. Last line, there is no such thing as free money. Michael Broadcorp, very quick and solid, Michael. I'm giving you a full salute on this one. For the record, Matt Burke receives $64,000 in a forgivable PPP loan from the federal government. That would otherwise be known as free money. Oh, that free money. That was just helping a business owner make it through the hard times. Screw the employees, but thank God I was able to make it. Dude, you can't make it this easy on us, man. You just cannot make it this easy on us. Dear Lord, Burke. There's no such thing as free money. Oh, by the way, you know, I love the free money. Oh, delicious, delicious government free money. Oh, love it. Love it, love it, love it, love it. Make it a big old Scrooge McDuck tub in the backyard. Go to go diving right on in. Oh, that on top of, by the way, did you see Jensen yesterday with his new energy policy? Where the entire point of it is, hey, let's get rid of clean car technology, because that's it. I mean, that's the one thing the Republicans want, is they want to get rid of clean car technology. They don't even want you to have the option of buying an electric car in this state. That's just not what they want. They want to basically make it to where you don't have any option but to buy a fossil fuel car. That is what the Republicans want. But, you know, Jensen came on out and kind of put on his best conservative idea of what a hippie is. Hey there, hippie cats. I'm for wind energy. I'm for solar power. I'm for geothermal. We got to get rid of the clean car standards. But hey, you know what? Because nothing in this is where you know he's doing the conservative hippie thing when he says this. We should get into nuclear power. Oh, yeah. Hippie time. Woo! Nuclear power, because that's what all the hippies want. Nuclear power. Let me think about this for a second. What could possibly go wrong with a nuclear reactor? And still we have no idea where we're going to put all that nuclear waste? Hippie. There is your crack team. Or no, are they on crack? They might. I don't know. They're not on crack. I don't think they're on crack. We don't believe they're on crack, but they're cracked. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Brett joins us when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Brett Johnson in the studio with me. So I saw this, and this is actually pretty solid. thing. Well, actually, if I may, Todd Collett, thank you very much. Todd Collett is sponsoring AM 950 all this week. Todd, of course, lives in Spain, used to be here, wants to support the station. This is how he does it. Thank you very much. You can call 952-946-8885, 952-946-8885 on finding out how you can do that as well. I also do want to make sure I mention, too, that his buddy is working Lifeline Ukraine. This is a suicide prevention mental health hotline in Ukraine. Obviously, a high demand for needs. I'm going to repost the link to the Patreon page for them. Please make a donation if you can, and thank you very much to Todd. Brett, this is I saw this, and I said to myself, you know, this actually would probably be pretty good. Are you a fan of the movie The Princess Bride?
I am, yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Cary Elwes, very good actor, actually. He's been in a lot of different things. He is going to be at the Fitzgerald Theater in November for a screening of The Princess Bride. Of course, he starred in that movie among the very talented cast for that one. The Hennepin Theater Trust and First Avenue announced The Princess Bride, an inconceivable evening with Cary Elwes, is coming to the St. Paul Theater in the evening of Saturday, November 19th. So that's, would you go see that?
That sounds really interesting. Yeah, I might have to consider that if they're doing that. In a couple months from now, plenty of time to prepare. Yeah, interesting to hear what he says about it, too.
Rob Reiner's 1987 movie was becoming a cult classic, featuring a bevy of one-liners from cast. One of my daughter's friends had never seen it. We put it on. She loved it. Elwes, Robin Wright, Mandy Patinkin, Wallace Shawn, Christopher Guest, Chris Sarandon, Billy Crystal, Carol Kane, Peter Falk, Peter Cook, and, of course, Andre the Giant.
Yes, that's right.
And the stories that Billy Crystal talks about with Andre the Giant and the amount that guy was drinking. Holy God. Elwes played Wesley, the black-clad hero, rescues his true love, Princess Buttercup, played by Wright, with the aid of Patinkin's Indigo Montoya and Andre the Giant's Fezzik. The event at the Fitz will see Elwes answer audience questions, tell behind-the-scenes stories. I would do that in a heartbeat.
The behind-the-scenes stories would be interesting, just with all of those actors and actresses you just listed right there. I mean, I forgot, like, some of these names that were in that movie that are big names.
You can tell when people are having fun on a set. And when you watch that film, as good as it is, you can tell the people that are on there had a good time doing it. They mm-hmm. can. It's like there's movies like Ghostbusters, Thor Ragnarok. You can tell the same thing. They had fun making that movie, and it comes across. I would do that in a heartbeat. I underrated actor, Cary Elwes. So it's you know, he did a lot of movies in the 80s and early 90s, and we forget, you know, he's going to forever be known on this. I mean, it's the James T. Kirk thing, you know. You're always you can do T.J. Hooker all you like, man. You're Kirk. That's all you are. You got a great interview for us. What we got coming up?
Yeah, we're speaking with Ross Stadtheim of MJSB Employment Justice. We're going to be doing some frequent interviews with them. You and I are going to be talking with them every few weeks or so. So at least today, we're giving you kind of an introduction to what they do at MJSB. Because if you're at your place of work and let's say you experience sexual harassment or even see sexual harassment or have other issues with your employer, whether it be problems with workers' compensation or anything else, they're a great resource at MJSB Employment Justice. They're not, you know, ambulance chaser type lawyers. They're trying to get a good outcome and get justice for you. So mainly today we're going to be introducing you to them and telling you a little bit about what they do, but we'll also get into this really interesting case in the 8th Circuit District here in Minnesota that actually made its way to the Supreme Court, and despite having our right-wing justices, they actually ruled in favor of the employees in this case at Taco Bell, I believe in the Duluth area, where they had they were talking about arbitration and some other issues as well. So we'll get into that in just a moment.
Brett Johnson right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here on the Matt McNeil Show. So over the past few weeks, you've probably heard some messages from MJSB Employment Justice. And they're someone that can help if you've been wronged at work. If you've been wronged at work, what do you do next? Well, at MJSB Employment Justice, they provide legal counsel to individuals who have experienced discrimination, retaliation, or harassment in the workplace. They advocate on your behalf so you can focus on moving forward. Joined now by Ross Stadtheim. He is with MJSB Employment Justice as he joins us now on the show. Ross, good to have you on.
Hey, thanks, Brett. Good to be on.
Absolutely. So I'm curious, how did you get involved with MJSB Justice?
Well, me and my partners, myself, MJSB stands for, it's the initials of all four partners at the firm. We're 50% women owned, and it's myself, Ross Stadtheim, Chris Moreland, Bree Johnson, and Amy Boyle. And we're all four equal partners at the firm. And essentially, we have a lot of experience in representing individuals against large Fortune 500 companies and companies that are a little bit smaller. And we've been doing myself, Chris, and the gang at MJSB have been doing this type of work for decades between us. So that's how we got started. And we were at a large law firm in downtown Minneapolis. And we decided, you know, hey, now's the time to open up our own shop.
Absolutely. And I think when you are an employee who has been wronged at work, it can be very intimidating and think, well, do I need to seek legal counsel in this situation? Because oftentimes you think, well, it's just easier not to fight things. Is that often what you find, too, when you talk to clients that first reach out to you guys and saying, hey, I need help with this situation?
Absolutely. You know, one common theme that I've, you know, really seen throughout the, you know, 200, 300 or so clients that I've represented over my 10 years in practice has been that nobody's really looking for this. Nobody's looking. Everybody wants to work. Everybody wants to, you know, have a great workplace. Everybody wants to get up in the morning and, you know, be excited for work. But a lot of times that doesn't happen. And when you need help, that's when we're there.
So what are some of the reasons people might have to hesitate reaching out for help when they are wronged at work, whether it's through not getting paid overtime or sexual harassment or anything like that? What are oftentimes the reasons people have for not reaching out earlier or being intimidated by the situation?
Well, I think that last word that you just hit on right there, Brett, intimidation a little bit. You know, they think, hey, you know, I need to suck it up, or, you know, if I do have something, you know, the pockets are so deep that I'm not going to be able to succeed, or I'm not going to be able to be heard. And that's what we give employees at MJSB Employment Justice, their voice, their opportunity to be heard. Yeah.
Well, I think, too, when we talk about cases with, like, sexual harassment or any other kind of harassment at work, oftentimes people will think, well, somebody else will report it. I don't need to do anything. And I think that happens a lot when that occurs at work, correct?
Absolutely. You know, that I think reporting something at work when something is wrong, and then a lot of times the messenger is shot, and those are what we call retaliation cases. Those are one of the most common cases in that we see at MJSB Employment Justice. Somebody tries to do the right thing by reporting a problem, by reporting harassment on behalf of themselves or a coworker, or recognizing that something, you know, just isn't up to snuff. Something's a little bit illegal in the workplace, and they report that, they try to do the right thing, and then all of a sudden they're out of a job for a very weird reason.
So if someone reaches out to you, walk us through the process on what happens when someone gives you a call and says, hey, you know, I've run into this situation with my employer and I need help.
Right. So when somebody gives us a call at MJSB Employment Justice, we do a free consultation. We talk the prospective client, you know, as to what they need to do next. If they've already been terminated and they're like, hey, do I have a case? We tell them if they have a case. You know, we don't want to waste their time or our time if they don't have a case or don't have something to move forward with. After that, we either, you know, sign them up as a client and then we're off to the races, or say, you know what? Unfortunately, you don't have any here. We agree with you that what happened to you is typically unfair, but, you know, you have to hit the perfect legal pinholes in order to have a case, so to speak. And not every, you know, situation is wrongful. It has to fall into one of the legal buckets like discrimination, harassment, you know, retaliation in order to go forward with an employment case, so to speak.
And I think that's important to point out, because you and I were talking along with Chad the last time you were in to record that you're not, for lack of a better way of putting it, like ambulance chasers who are just out there looking to litigate anything and try to make a quick buck. You are actually looking for at the individual cases and making sure there is merit and making sure that you can achieve justice in the court system, which I think is important when we're talking about these types of cases, because it's easy to think, well, these guys are just going to be out here to try to make a quick buck and do whatever they need to do. And that's not what you guys do.
Right. Well, when somebody's terminated in their job, they really can't pay a high hourly, you know, fee or anything anything like that. So we take all of our cases, typically speaking, unless it's an extenuating circumstance, on contingency, meaning, you know, we don't get paid unless you get paid. So the case has to be meritorious in order for us to succeed for our clients, because the better that we do for them, the better that we do for ourselves, so to speak. Not to, it's a little crass to talk about money, but that's what the civil justice system provides. I can't put anybody in jail, and neither can the court system in the civil justice system when you're suing, you know, your employer for a wrongful termination type case.
And talk about how you try to really individualize each case for every person that you do work with, because it's not a one-size-fits-all approach for anyone who, even if someone has a similar case from someone you may have had in the past, things are still very different, and you go out of your way to make sure that things are personalized for each of the clients that you serve.
Absolutely. You know, justice means many things to different people. You know, it's in our name, and it's a very personalized thing. One person's version of justice might be different from the next client's, you know, version of justice. Some people, you know, they're looking just to negotiate a favorable exit for themselves, you know, something small. Other folks, you know, feel that they've been really, really wronged and want to, you know, take the case all the way to a jury trial, and all walks of life in between, or all interests in between that.
So describe some of the clients you typically work with. I know typically maybe is not the best way to put it, but who are some of the types of employees that you've worked with in the past at MJSB?
Sure. Well, we represent everybody at MJSB, everybody from a McDonald's worker all the way up to, you know, somebody in the CEO, somebody in the C-suite, an executive, and everybody in between. You know, a lot of folks that come to us are managers. You know, at large companies, a lot of folks that come to us are, you know, blue collar workers too. I just got done representing a person who was a heavy highway construction operator. Worked on, you know, our Minnesota roads in the heat for, you know, hours on end, making sure we have safe roads to drive on. So, and then we just got done also representing a person who was the director of human resources at a company. So everybody in between that.
We're speaking with Ross Stadheim of MJSB Employment Justice, and I want to talk specifically about a case that was just in the Supreme Court. And this is an interesting one that I found as I was reading about this one, where the Supreme Court gave a rare win to employees in arbitration cases. And let's go through some background on this. So the name of this case is Morgan versus Sundance, and it got its start when a Taco Bell employee named Robin Morgan filed a class action on behalf of herself and other similarly situated employees, alleging that Sundance, which was the owner and operator of the Taco Bell franchise where she worked, routinely violated federal wage and hour laws by failing to pay overtime. Now, when Morgan began working for Sundance, she had signed a contract in which she agreed to use binding arbitration instead of going to court, which is very common for many employees to have, or for employers to have employees sign these types of arbitration agreements. And these arbitration agreements basically say that they're going to resolve any disputes that might arise during the course of an employment. So despite the fact that Morgan signed this agreement, Morgan did not file an arbitration case, but instead filed her case in the court. So this is significant, Ross, because this is an interesting case, being that the Supreme Court actually ruled in favor of the employees. So talk about what normally happens in this situation, because at least as I would be looking at this in very layman terms, I would think, well, she went to court instead of filing that arbitration, which she signed. Wouldn't she be out of luck in this situation? But as this case kind of shows, that wasn't what happened at all.
Right. So I think it's important for us to take a quick step back and, you know, what is arbitration? So arbitration is a private court system where you can contractually, an employee can contractually sign away their right to court. So they say, you know, you still have a right to, you know, litigate your case, so to speak, but it has to be in private. It has to be in arbitration. That's what arbitration is, a private court system instead of our public court system like the Supreme Court, like the, you know, district courts down at Hennepin County. So arbitration, employers like arbitration because it's private and technically on a broad, you know, spectrum, the awards to the employee for the wrongful conduct on behalf of the employer tend to be smaller than a jury trial. So it's just basically a contract is what arbitration is. And I'm sorry, what was your question, Brett?
So what normally happens if someone runs into this type of situation if they do have arbitration? Because I think, as you were alluding to, oftentimes the deck is really stacked against employees. I remember talking about this when I used to host a show on the station where usually it always goes the employer's ways and the deck is very stacked. So this is an interesting case being that, well, this individual decided, I'm not going to go to arbitration. I'm going to go straight into the court system.
Right. Well, what happened here in this particular case, Morgan versus Sundance, is a lot of times, you know, employers will have this arbitration agreement, but they'll be like, oh, you know, the employee has already filed a lawsuit. Let's just wait in the weeds a little bit to see what happens and try to file, you know, like a motion to dismiss or get her case kicked out in the court system right away instead of, you know, forcing the employee to go to arbitration right away. So they'll lay in the weeds. They'll maybe lose their motion or something like that. And then they'll say, oh, just kidding. You have this arbitration agreement. We want to go back to arbitration now. So that's what the employer was doing here in Morgan versus Sundance. They Morgan filed a case in court, and then the employer filed a bunch of motions to get her case, you know, dismissed, right? And then after they lost those motions, they were like, hey, just kidding. We're invoking the right to arbitration. We want to get kicked back now. So they're essentially trying to have their cake and eat it too. And what the court said in Morgan is, no, no, no. You waived your right to arbitration because you invoked the court system. You can't have your cake and eat it too, essentially.
And that's an interesting ruling because the Supreme Court not only ruled in favor of the employee, but this was a unanimous decision, which is something we almost never see with the Supreme Court, as we've seen all sorts of high-profile cases. So it seemed very cut and dry. So really, this was on the employer to not have their cake and eat it, as you said.
Right, exactly. And the Morgan versus Sundance case is pretty narrow. But what the Eighth Circuit had is they had a three-prong test under the waiver requirement. You have to – if you waive your right to arbitration on behalf of the employer, if you knew of your right to arbitrate, employers always know of their right to arbitrate because they're the ones who presented the contract. You acted inconsistently with that right, meaning you had the case in court for a while and you didn't right away invoke your right to arbitrate. And then – the third prong is, you know, the other party was prejudiced. You know, Morgan herself was prejudiced. And what the Eighth Circuit, what the Supreme Court did is they threw out that third prong, that prejudice. The party does not have to be prejudiced by employer waiting in the weeds. So it's just those first two prongs. You got to know of your right to arbitrate and you act inconsistently with that right is what the Supreme Court said.
Now, you've experienced a similar case. In fact, you were actually involved in a case that also took place in the Eighth Circuit as well, which was in the same court system where this case originally started from. So talk about your case a little bit, because this was a very similar situation.
Sure. My case was back in 2016, and it was a guy that I represented. His name was Richard Messina, and he basically had an employment contract with a California company. And we litigated that. I filed a case on his behalf in court, Minnesota federal court. And we litigated that case for about 8 or 9 months. They filed a bunch of motions to transfer to California. They filed a bunch of motions to, you know, dismiss the case. And we were, you know, going along our way in the court system. And after they lost their motion to transfer venue to California and they said, no, we're going to stay in Minnesota here. They're like, oh, we have an arbitration agreement. We need to get kicked out of here. And so the lower court in Minnesota ruled in our favor, said, no, you waived your right. And then so we went up to the Eighth Circuit, just like the lower court in this Morgan case. And the Eighth Circuit said, no, you actually waived your right and ruled in favor of us. So we litigated the case through the court system. It's interesting because the Eighth Circuit found in the Morgan case, which also was litigated coincidentally for 8 months in the court system, that the party was not prejudiced, and they found prejudice in my case. So they kind of flip-flopped a little bit on that one.
So if someone is an employee that signed these types of arbitration agreements, is it their right to go to the court system and decide not to go to arbitration? Because in some cases, that seems like that might be the right course of action, being that oftentimes arbitration is kind of stacked against you.
Yeah, it depends, because it's if you have a good argument that the court could throw out the arbitration agreement, you should file your case in court. but there's a presumption in favor of arbitration. It's a contract. The employee signed the contract with the employer. So if the employer invokes the right to arbitrate right at the beginning of the case, you're going to be forced to arbitrate, unfortunately, is the state of the law.
And if someone does run into this type of situation where they have a dispute with their employer at work, they are not sure where to go next, I think it would be a good idea to reach out to you guys, even if you can't necessarily help. It's good to know your rights, that you might not necessarily be tied into these arbitration agreements. Just to hit it home again, it's usually stacked against the employees, and you really should be exploring all avenues to make sure that you're getting your rights and getting your justice.
Right. When you sign on with an employer, you sign all those documents, right, mm-hmm. in an employment packet, you know, like you got the employee handbook, you know, that you're going to agree to their internet policy. A lot of times they'll give you a document that is an arbitration agreement, and they say you need to sign that too. You should call us before you decide to sign that
Even
document.
Even before you sign it. Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because sometimes, you know, you can get away with not signing that arbitration agreement, and they'll just kind of look the other way. You'll sign everything else, and, you know, they'll forget that you didn't sign the arbitration agreement. But if they do, in Minnesota, the state of the law is they can force you to sign that arbitration agreement or not allow you to come on board.
And I'm guessing that varies from state to state depending on where you live, whether you have to sign that arbitration agreement, correct?
It does, Brett. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting because – as I'm thinking through, yeah, if you're someone who started a new job, you're going through and signing all that paperwork as you're talking about, and then you come across that arbitration agreement, yeah, it's probably a good idea to have a lawyer, have someone like you guys at MJSB check this thing out to make sure that you are getting access to all of your rights. But I think it's important to point out that, well, they can deny you employment, but sometimes
right.
they might not care and might overlook it, and then you could be in better shape if you do run into that type of dispute with an employer.
Exactly. Exactly, Brett.
We've been speaking with Ross Stadtheim. He is with MJSB Employment Justice. Where can people get a hold of you and learn more in case they need to reach out?
Sure. So our website is www.mjsbjustice.com. And they also can call us. Our, you know, our phone number is 612-677-2356. Sorry about that.
I know. Well, it's always easy to just go on
yep.
the internet too. Yeah.
Yep.
Do a Google search, go to the website, and make sure you can reach out that way as well. Well, it's been good speaking with you, Ross. I know we're going to be doing these interviews every couple of weeks, either with Matt or myself. I know we have a case we're going to be talking about in a few weeks that has to do with veterans' rights that I know Matt will certainly be interested in talking about with you. So, well, we have been speaking with Ross Stadtheim of MJSB Employment Justice. Make sure you check them out for anything you need in terms of working with employees, if you've been wronged at work, whether you've been wrongly terminated, experienced sexual harassment, or are having disputes about wages, make sure you reach out to MJSB Employment Justice. Ross, thanks so much for joining me on the show.
Brett, it was awesome. Thank you.
All right, let's take a break and send things back over to Matt McNeil on AM 950.
Progressive Voice of Minnesota. That's that. Yeah, we got that great interview there. We'll spotlight that as well, have that up for you here today. And we look forward to having those guys back on to talk more with them coming up before too much longer. Devil's Advocate Radio, those guys are coming in next. Then, of course, a reminder, one of the best shows I've ever heard, Native Roots Radio, that's coming up here in the 6 o'clock hour. Robert Pilot and crew, they're standing on by. We're back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.